Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. With today's nomination of Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense, we'll begin with an analysis of Senator Hagel's evolution from a loyal Republican soldier to a fierce critic of the Vietnam and Iraq wars, which he concluded were wars of choice based on lies. John Judas, a senior editor at The New Republic, who profiled Chuck Hagel in an article, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hagel, joins us to describe the war hero turned heretic whose nomination the neocons and his former Republican colleagues are determined to block. Then we'll examine the choice of John Brennan to be the next director of the CIA, with a former member of the CIA's clandestine services who retired in 2007 as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats. Glenn Carl joins us to discuss the role of torture that is reported to have scuttled Brennan's earlier chance of getting the job, and how that issue, which has been revived by the movie Zero Dark Thirty, will affect Brennan's confirmation. Then finally, we'll look into the possibility of minting a platinum coin with a $1 trillion denomination to be deposited in the Treasury in the event that the Republicans again hold the debt ceiling hostage and shut down the government. John Hilsenrath, the chief economics correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, who covers the Federal Reserve, joins us to discuss this gimmick endorsed by Paul Krugman and the possibility it will be used. Joining us now is John Judas, who's a senior editor at The New Republic, an active member of SDS and the left of the 60s. He taught philosophy at Berkeley and at the San Francisco Art Institute. His books include The Folly of Empire, The Emerging Democratic Majority, and The Paradox of American Democracy, Elites, Special Interests, and the Betrayal of Public Trust. He wrote a profile of Chuck Hagel in The New Republic, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hagel. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Judas.
Yeah, hi.
And John, your article, which you wrote at the time Chuck Hagel was thinking of running for president, and he of course withdrew in a rather strange way. He would have challenged, of course, John McCain in the primaries. Is that the source of bitterness? Because McCain, Hagel was in many ways a protege of McCain in the Senate, but clearly he is not supporting his nomination as Secretary of Defense.
Oh, the source of McCain's bitterness? I think that comes a little earlier. Yes, they were very close in the 1990s. There was a kind of a caucus of McCain, Kerry from Nebraska, Hagel, a few more people, I guess later Reed joined it, of people who had fought in Vietnam. And Hagel was his co-chairman in the 2000 campaign, but they broke over the Iraq War, and they did that before Hagel really thought about running for president. It was at about 2005, 2006, when Hagel realized that that this wasn't going to be a something that was going to be resolved through negotiations multilaterally, the UN, but it was an invasion very similar to Vietnam, and that it was going to result in a similar kind of disaster. And he became a critic. McCain was continually a defender, remains a defender to this day, and that's really the source of the antagonism between the two men. I mean, they made some nasty comments about each other at the time also.
And at the time, Hagel did an article for Esquire magazine and an interview with George Stephanopoulos where he raised the specter of impeaching George W. Bush.
Yes, he didn't actually say that he would wanted him to be impeached, but he sort of implied that it would be understandable if people tried to impeach him. Yes.
And that, of course, was at the time of where the U.S. was deeply mired in the Iraq War. What I find fascinating about the profile you did of Chuck Hagel, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hagel, is how he and his younger brother, Tom, went into the Vietnam War and by some bureaucratic accident ended up in exactly the same unit.
Yes.
And that He was a rifleman. He actually volunteered to go to Vietnam rather than spend 6 months in West Germany. And the brothers fought together, and then in Saigon and in the jungles and during the Tet Offensive, and at different moments, each saved the other's lives. And in the spring of 1968, when a mine, I'm just reading from your article, when a mine went off under their armored personnel carrier outside of Saigon, Chuck Hagel pulled Tom out with blood pouring from his ears. And then the ammunition started to cook off inside the carrier, burning Chuck Hagel severely and blowing out both of his eardrums. What subsequently happened after the Vietnam War is fascinating, that the brother Tom was tortured by guilt over the people he'd killed and seen killed, and he believed that the war had been a waste and was immoral. And it was quoted here in your article, "To the day I die, I will be ashamed I fought in this war." And he became a law professor and is a liberal Democrat. His older brother, Chuck, stayed with the belief that it was the noble thing to do. But then at the time that we're talking about, that critical time during the Iraq War in about 2007, 2008, he started to have deep reservations. And Chuck Hagel then read every book available on Vietnam. He went back to his Vietnam experiences to revisit it, and that appears to have informed his break with the Bush administration and the Republican Party.
It was actually a little earlier. It was sometime, it was even late 1990s or early 2000s. He was always fascinated by Vietnam, and he had read before. When he came back, he read extensively, but he thought it was it was a bad idea, but one that had to be carried through. I'd say that was his view of it. Then he heard this oral recording of Lyndon Johnson talking to Senator Richard Russell in the beginning. I think it was 1965, where Johnson said in effect to Russell, "This is going to turn out very badly, but I can't go down as the first president to abandon a war." And what Hagel concluded from that was that he had really fought in order to he had fought in Vietnam, and all these people had died because Johnson had fears about his political reputation, and that the war really wasn't something to save democracy, but it was something that was perpetuated out of a fear of failure by a president. And it was that the recording, listening to that recording, that really turned him and made him reconsider the Vietnam War. And he carried that attitude into the beginning of the debate about Iraq. And even he supported the resolution in October authorizing force if necessary, but he had been assured by Powell that the United States was going to do everything it could to get the UN to go through with the inspections to see if it could be resolved that way. And if they had to go to war, it would be similar to the first Gulf War, where it would be championed by the UN. There would be a big coalition, and it would be completely different from the kind of thing that did occur. And when we did go in unilaterally, when it did occur, just as when people didn't greet us as liberators but occupiers, Hagel turned against it. So that's the story briefly of his.
Sure. John Judas, I recall the tape of Johnson talking to Senator Russell, and in the tape he talks about, he said, "I got this sergeant here on my staff. He's got a bunch of kids. He's about to go over there. I don't know what we're fighting for there." It's unbelievable to recognize that the President of the United States knows what a complete quagmire and waste of time Vietnam is, and yet he feels compelled to continue the war because he's afraid of what it will do to his presidency if he pulls out. Where at the time of the Iraq War, Chuck Hagel, of course, I think this is why the neocons hate him so much. When he's talking about the weapons of mass destruction and the idea that Iraq possesses nuclear weapons, he told Newsweek, "It's increasing It's interesting to me that many of those who want to rush the country into war and think it would be so quick and easy don't know anything about war. They come at it from an intellectual perspective versus having sat in jungles or foxholes and watched their friends get their heads blown off. I try to speak for those ghosts of the past a little bit. Do you think he's going to carry that with him, assuming he gets the job as head of the Pentagon?
Well, he'll carry it with him. You have to recognize that the Secretary of Defense is not all-powerful. The president's going to make the decisions. But I think that Obama's willingness to nominate Hagel, which surprised me because he doesn't usually walk into these kind of conflicts, indicates that Obama has some doubts about unilaterally going after Iran. And that would be the next step: Vietnam, Iraq, now Iran, where we would attack another country that was not planning to attack us, and possibly get involved in another big war. So I think that there's a message there about Iran and about Obama's willingness to play ball with Netanyahu in Israel, who seems to want us to do their bidding in Iran.
So would that explain then, John Judas, why the neocons and their friends over here this whole idea of trying to say that he's somehow anti-Semitic or not sufficiently supportive of Israel because of comments that he made to Aaron David Miller, saying that a lot of people on Capitol Hill are intimidated by the Jewish lobby, which is about as controversial as saying that the sun sets in the West.
Yes, that's true. It's not controversial. Everybody says that. And it's true. And I think what's interesting is that that Jewish liberals and conservatives are to a great extent divided on this. J Street, the other pro-Israel organization, is supporting Hagel. Most of the organizations that have opposed him that are associated with Israel are organizations that are either close to the Netanyahu government or even to their right and don't believe in any two-state. They believe in a kind of greater Israel that would incorporate the Palestinians or send them off to Jordan.
Well, but my question, John Judas, is the reason that the Israeli pro-Israel hawks and the neoconservatives who brought us the Iraq War and who are going to the mat opposing Chuck Hagel and Lindsey Graham and McCain and others, is it because they feel that as Secretary of Defense is somehow going to prevent them from having their war against Iran?
I think that's right. I think some of the people who are against him are legitimately fearful that he is going to hurt Israel, damage Israel. I don't think that's the case, but I think that I think that there are people who believe that and for that reason oppose him. I think there are people who want to screw Obama and think that they can beat him on this on something the way they did on the Rice nomination, and that's why they're opposing him. So I think there's a multiplicity of motives involved.
Again, I'm speaking with John Judas, who's a senior editor at The New Republic, and he wrote a profile of Chuck Hagel in The New Republic back in 2007, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hagel. This profile explains his evolution from being a fairly loyal Republican soldier to a fierce critic of both the Iraq War and of the Vietnam War, in which he served and won two Purple Hearts. So then the question then arises, John Judas, how is he going to get the votes? I mean, there's some Democrats who are wavering, Chuck Schumer, for example. What's the president going to do to weigh in here? Of course, it's different from floating a name than actually nominating somebody. So what's your sense of what it's going to take to stop this attempt to block Hagel's nomination?
I'm not a good one to ask. You should ask somebody from the Congressional Quarterly or one of those places. I would worry myself, but I assume that Obama and his people did some head counting before they did this. I'm sure they did that with the Rice nomination, and that they think that they can get Hagel through the Senate. But I would worry that the Republicans would decide that this was a united front issue, and then all they would need would be, 9 or 10 Democrats, and it would be all over. So I don't know. This I think it's going to be a battle.
Well, you would think that that Hagel himself can make a pretty strong case for himself, can't he? And he's already said that all of these attacks on him, he hasn't been able to answer them, and now that he can, so I take it that will be the next step, right? That he'll make himself available.
Yes, and he'll answer questions, but. It just depends how much of a fuss the Republicans want to make. I would suspect that the Obama people think that they can get him through, but I just don't. I don't know. I think a long time ago in 1977 there was a guy named Paul Warnke who was up for being head of the Arms Control Agency, and the neoconservatives blocked him. People are going to try to make this a kind of demonstration project. Whether they succeed or not, I just don't know.
Well, but history and reality is on the side of Chuck Hagel, is it not? I mean, the Vietnam War was a catastrophe. The Iraq War was a catastrophe.
History was on the side of a lot of things. History is on the side of having a stronger stimulus program and not cutting the budget when you're in the middle of a recession. History was on the side of not going into Iraq in the first place. But we do screwy things in this country. Right? I mean, we sometimes ignore these lessons.
Well, then, but why do the neocons have any credibility? I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either. I think you have to watch those Freddy Krueger movies, Nightmare on Elm Street, where the guy keeps coming back. You know, they think he's dead each time, and then after 13 episodes, he's still around. I don't understand it. I think they have some money behind them. I think they're articulate. I think for a long time they've had the Israel organizations, but fractionalizing within that coalition, and you have you have people like Tom Friedman coming out for Hagel. So I think it's going to be more difficult to form that kind of alliance in this case.
Well, again, I'm speaking with John Judas, a senior editor at the New Republic, who profiled Chuck Hagel in the New Republic in an article, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hagel. Tell us about Chuck Hagel's relationships to some of the people who actually tried to stop the Iraq war. Brent Scowcroft, the national security advisor under Bush's father, for reasons which I'm still mystified about, Bush's own father did not counsel the son against the war in Iraq. He let him go ahead and make that massive blunder. I don't know whether at that point Brent Scowcroft and Bush Sr. knew that Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld were running the presidency, and the kid didn't know what the hell was going on. But the long and the short of it is, Scowcroft is close to Hagel and represents that foreign policy which they refer to as principled realism, as opposed to the reckless utopianism of the neoconservatives. Give us a sense of who's going to come to, in terms of the foreign policy establishment, who's going to come to Chuck Hagel's defense?
Well, I think that the people you named already have. There's a whole group of them, former State Department, National Security Advisors, Scowcroft, Brzezinski, Frank Carlucci, Carla Hills, who was U.S. Trade Representative, Thomas Pickering. He was he's ambassador to Iraq. There's a whole group of them.
Colin Powell too, right?
Hmm.
Colin Powell.
Yeah. Colin Powell has come to his defense. Yes, that's true. There's a group that signed a letter. That's what I was trying to think of in my mind. Powell wasn't part of that, but yes, independently he has defended him. Within Washington, there is a lot of former foreign policy people who think the way Hegel does, or vice versa, who have influenced the way Hegel thinks. Scowcroft, you know, was against the Iraq War. In August 2002, he wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal counseling against it. And he in the last 10 years, he and Brzezinski have worked together. There are several what you call study groups that have formed around these ideas of United States doing things multilaterally, not trying to impose its will upon countries, particularly in the Middle East, and trying to achieve some kind of reconciliation between the Israelis and Palestinians, rather than leaving it up to the two parties to fight it out by themselves. And Hegel is very much part of it. He signed these groups. He signed these reports on both Israel and Palestine and on Iran that took positions that have angered the neoconservatives, but that are not unrepresentative of how a lot of people in Washington think.
Well, I think if you really polled the military, the rank and file, the guys in uniform, you'd find that they pretty much all of them would support Hegel, and particularly the stand that he's taking about the dishonesty of politicians using soldiers as victims of their own political ambitions and dishonesty. I think that, it's the neocons and these guys that have never been near the battlefield that seem to be appearing on television all the time. In the real world, there's an awful lot of people in the military and in the Pentagon who I'm sure admire Hegel and will support his. Not that they have a voice on television. That's the problem, right?
Right, and they don't necessarily have a vote in Congress either. So,
yeah. So
we'll have to see.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here, John Judas.
Sure, it was a pleasure.
Again,
bye-bye.
Again, I've been speaking with John Judas, who's a senior editor at The New Republic. He's an active member of the SDS and the left in the 60s. He taught philosophy at Berkeley and at the San Francisco Art Institute. And his books include The Folly of Empire, The Emerging Democratic Majority, and The Paradox of American Democracy, Elite Special Interests and the Betrayal of Public Trust. He wrote a profile of Chuck Hegel in The New Republic, Look Back in Anger, The Unmooring of Chuck Hegel. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back in a moment. Talking about the nomination of John Brennan to be the next head of the CIA.
Oh no, oh well, I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Yes, war no more. Well, I ain't gonna.